once, and I talked about tomorrow night at 6. So we have the three meetings. We're at different parts of the book. I'm trying to add new information. Since I've been doing the meetings for 10 years, I'm trying to make it more exciting for me and give more information. Other people asking God to help me direct and guide that. So today we're on Doctor's Opinion. We're going through the book now on Saturday for the 10th time. I just want to say that for those listening in the podcast, I don't speak for AA or the Experience the Big Book group or anyone. It's just sharing my experience, strength, and hope in reading the big book and see what we can get out of it. Each time I do it, I don't listen to the ones I've done before. I have no idea what I said on Doctor's Opinion last time we did it. I ask God to give me new information. And actually, before every meeting, before I get out of the car, I ask God to direct my thinking and open my mind so I see more truth. And I kind of review before each meeting, even though I've done this a million times. And I got some more out of what we're reading today than I think I have before. And I saw some new words. We're always looking for new words in the book. And so we have the site experiencethebigbook.org. I've written 35 thoughts on recovery, and we have about 90 podcasts, episodes, so you can find a lot of information if it's of use to you. We covered Doctor's Opinion, the beginning of it, last week. A few things about the big book that I haven't mentioned. I really strongly suggest that if you're new, you read the big book with someone. That's kind of why I do this meeting. But when you read the big book, it's a textbook, and textbooks are designed to ask you questions. Some textbooks will have like a lesson, and then they'll have questions. We have some teachers in the room. But this book is meant to be read, and it's read as a series of questions asking, does this reflect on you? Do you have this? Does this apply to you? And I think sometimes when you read it, and you're looking at what they read, you say, well, that's good for them, but, you know, or it doesn't apply as much to you if you don't look at it in the first person, especially the doctor's opinion. And the doctor's opinion is in Roman numerals, and it doesn't say chapter one, and a lot of people don't read the forewords or the prefaces. But this book was written for alcoholics. It was written for alcoholics to read. The first page in the original book was Doctor's Opinion, page one. Somehow they changed it in 1955, and they made it in Roman numerals. I've heard some reasons why. None of them really made sense. The Doctor's Opinion was written first and was put in the beginning of the book, so that was the first thing that an alcoholic would read. Remember, this book was written so you would read this book and you would be able to understand, relate to it, and then follow the directions and recover. And the doctor's opinion is so important because unless you know what your problem is, how are you possibly going to have a solution? And so when I was a physician, people would come in and they say they have a problem, you know, they can't move their left arm. Okay, but the problem really was that they had a tumor on the right side of their brain. And unless that was treated, the arm wasn't going to get better. And so we come in here with a lot of symptoms of alcoholism in terms of our lives and the problems. But we have to understand the real problem. And it's threefold. It's the spiritual problem, which leads to the mental obsession. And then we have the physical allergy, and they're all triggered. So the spiritual malady, which we're going to look at, it's in Doctor's Opinion, but it's subtle. The mental obsession, the drink, which is triggered by the spiritual allergy because we can't live sober. And then once we drink, we have the phenomenon of craving and we're screwed and we keep drinking. So it's a threefold illness, and the treatment is to treat the spiritual malady, and then it says the physical and mental will straighten out. And the doctor was 9 years of practice with alcoholics when he wrote this chapter. He was not an alcoholic. And remember, he's the one who told Bill W. what Bill's problem was. And Dr. Bob, when they met in 1935, Dr. Bob knew he had a problem. He couldn't stop drinking. And he knew scripture, and he worked the Oxford group, but he could not stay sober because he didn't know what his problem was. And so we need to know the problem, and that's why the doctor's opinion is so important. I've been to a million discussion meetings. I've never seen anybody really read anything out of the doctor's opinion as the topic. So that's enough of my mantra about the big book and doctor's opinion. But let's see what he says today. Let's see how this applies and ask questions. Now, last week, we were in XXVIII. Jesus, I wish they'd just done page numbers. So XXVIII, don't report me, by the way, to New York if you're listening to this. I still remember the guy, I did a thing on AA Proof Literature. It was one of the first thoughts on recovery, but we had a guy from Oregon who was visiting, who was going to work at the power plant in Burlington, and we were reading from the steps we took, and he kept looking at the book and looking at the front and this and that. We were on resentment, by the way, at step four. And he was getting all worked up. And then he said, you know, this is not an AA-approved book. I'm going to report you to New York. I said, well, maybe you should read this chapter. Now, AA-approved literature is just in the front of the big book, you will see AA World Services Incorporated, all rights reserved. That means they have the rights to print the book. Now, if you look at the foreword to the fourth edition, they've lost the copyright since then, so you can get the AA book is printed by other people. But the AA-approved literature is just 12 steps, AA of age, Bill sees it, Dr. Bob and the old-timers pass it on, reflection, some booklets. That doesn't mean that that's the only thing that's approved for reading at the meeting. Which I've heard, oh, somebody say, well, that's not AA approved, so you can't read it. Bill W. clearly stated that anything can be read at meetings, anything that will help guide you to God. Now, at the first meeting, Dr. Bob read the Sermon on the Mount. Now, at the first AA meetings, there was no AA World Services. And so people misinterpret that as AA approved for approval for reading. It says, and in the big book, it says, be sure to see where religious and philosophical ideas are of value to you. Be open-minded. That's on the 11th step. So that's enough, because tomorrow I'm actually going to read from the Bible. So, because it has powerful stuff on why worry. So that's enough of that, too. All right. I'm on a roll today. He talks on XXVII, whatever the hell that is, 28, I guess, about the phenomenon of craving, which you have to understand if you're an alcoholic. Now, what that means is you have an allergy to alcohol. An allergy is an abnormal reaction to it. It's not the reaction that a normal person has. Now, the abnormal reaction craving of alcohol occurs after you drink. I hear a lot of new people say, I crave a drink. You know, they're sober. They have an obsession for the first drink, which we're going to read in the next few paragraphs, but the craving occurs after you drink. Now, he says that's limited to alcoholics, that average people don't have that. Now, I've seen that because I've been on cruises where there's free booze, and there's a lot of booze left behind. Now, if we had an AA group there would be no booze left behind. In fact, they would probably run out. Can you imagine a cruise where all the booze is free for a week of alcoholics who aren't in recovery? That would be something. That would be a CNN a reality show. Anyway, you have to understand that, because any scheme to combat alcohol about how you're going to drink or how you're going to control it or change your drinks or where you're going to be around is never going to work. Once it's in your body, it'll change. Now, anybody ever take NyQuil? Anybody feel good after NyQuil? Because it's pure alcohol. I've seen people relapse with NyQuil. and on Listerine. I had this this bad cough or something. I can't remember what it was. And I took some of this Robitussin DM, and I took a couple teaspoons, and it was pretty good. I said, well, maybe I should have another teaspoon. And then I realized it was like 40% alcohol or something. And so, but the craving, I could tell, it made me feel good. I don't consider that a relapse, but I didn't drink the whole bottle, but there are people who drink the whole bottle of Listerine. And anything that has alcohol in it, for me, is dangerous. And you, it says you can't break it, you can't change that. So if you're an alcoholic, then it says that you're going to have this allergy. Anybody have that in here? Anybody not? He says, once you have that, you're going to lose your self-confidence because you can't control how much you drink. And then you're going to lose your reliance upon things human because you're going to, once you drink, your problems are going to pile up on you and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Now, a lot of people come to AA and they think their problem is alcohol and what happens when they drink, but that's not. That's just the effect of being an alcoholic. And then they talk about frothy emotional appeal, and that's not going to work. People will tell you, you know, when you drink, bad things happen. Anybody ever have that happen to them? And you'll say, well, gee, you know, I won't drink anymore. And then you drink, but once you drink, you can't control how much you drink. And it says to change this, your ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if you're going to recreate your life. So he's already beginning to tell you what the solution looks like, and it's going to be a ideals of how you think your life should be based. And we talk about God-centered, and he says grounded in a power greater than themselves. And then you're going to recreate your life sober so you won't have to drink. Now, after he says that, he talks about the psychiatrists and how this is such a tragic disease, the third paragraph there. And then he really gets to the meat of the whole deal. And these next two paragraphs or several paragraphs are so powerful, and you need to really understand them and ask them if that holds true for you. He says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Alcohol has an effect on alcoholics, and we like the effect. Now, normal people may have that too. Doesn't say alcoholic people. But non-alcoholic people will stop. They'll say, I'm starting to feel it. Have you ever heard that? You know, I'm starting to feel it, so I don't want to drink anymore. Well, we just drink right through that. I mean, that's just the beginning. But alcohol has an effect on us. It has an effect on normal people, but it has an effect on alcoholics. And it says this sensation, this effect is so elusive. You know, and elusive means difficult to achieve or difficult to recall. And anybody remember when alcohol worked, how you felt? And then it becomes elusive because you can't, it's hard to achieve it again. And we drink right through it. And that while they admit it is injurious, it's dangerous, it's causing them problems, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. We can't see the truth about what happens after we drink. Anybody relate to that? Before we drink. See, after a time you can't differentiate the true from the false, so you'll say you don't want to drink, but then you drink. So right before you drink, you can't see the truth about alcohol. Or you'll tell yourself something that's true, you can control it this time. Or it's not going to be so bad. Or I haven't drank for 60 days, so I can stop any time. There's a lot of ways to look at it. It's a complicated sentence, but the truth from the false. So you can't live on truth, you're living on a lie. And the lie is that you can drink or that alcohol is going to help the situation that you're in. Anybody relate to that? To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Well, other people look at your life and say it's very abnormal. But to you, waking up a bad night before, saying you're not going to drink, and then you drink at 5 o'clock, that must seem normal to you. See, and other people say, well, gee, that's pretty abnormal. Or right before you're supposed to have some important event, you get drunk. Or you have all these behaviors drunk that are causing you harm. People can look at our lives and see that they're abnormal. But we can't see it because we're living in it. Now, if you can't see your alcoholic life seems the only normal one, then you're not living on truth. And we talk about the steps are designed to break down our old ideas and to substitute truth for them. So one of the things we have to look at is our alcoholic life is not normal. And it's causing us harm, and we don't need to be that way. But when you come in here, people can't see that. And they only see what they think caused all their problems. But they can't see that it's you and the way you see things. Now, here's a powerful line. He's saying alcoholics, not normal people, are restless, irritable, and discontented. Now, this is sober. Sober, you're restless, irritable, and discontented. So the normal state for an alcoholic, sober, is to be restless, irritable, and discontented. Contented. Now, and also, I wrote in here that because we like the effect produced by alcohol, we have a mental addiction to it. Get it? And then, since we have the allergy of the body, we have a physical addiction to it. Now, we have a physical addiction that can only be treated by not drinking. But we have a mental addiction to drinking. So that there's nothing we can do about it. That's called powerless. So he's bringing this out, the powerlessness of the alcoholic. Now, restless is unable to rest or relax as a result of anxiety. Any alcoholic ever have that? Any of you ever sit in a room, everything seems okay, you're in a meeting, you're at home, you're watching TV, and you just feel uneasy? Any alcoholic in this room ever have that? Anybody not have it? And so it's almost the way we live. And when you get sober, it's so different that you don't know how to explain it. You don't know how to explain that you're okay. You're not in that underlying anxiety. And then it says irritable. Now, I don't know if any of these people in the room are ever irritable, but it means tendency to be easily annoyed or angry. Anybody as an alcoholic sober get easily annoyed or angry? Yeah, if you're awake. And then discontented. Discontented is lack of contentment, dissatisfaction with one's circumstances. Does this describe the life sober of an alcoholic? And it can be the life sober of an alcoholic who's not in recovery. And it could be a life of an alcoholic sober in recovery, and then you have to treat this minute by minute through the steps, 10 and 11 and 12. So all alcoholics will be restless, irritable, discontented at some time. In fact, Bill W. and the authors of the book say on step 10, watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Watch all day for when you're getting restless, irritable, and discontented. And then you know you're back in self. And then we have to treat that through the steps. So this is going to be part of our lives forever. The problem is, before you come here, without the steps, without the program working the steps, you have no treatment for the restless, irritable, discontented state except alcohol. Alcohol was the treatment for this state in which we live sober. Now, the big book in AA is a program of recovery that has a different treatment besides alcohol. Now, alcohol is called the spirit. They used to call it spirits. And we're going to substitute one spirit for another. So when we're irritable, restless, and discontented today, and you might be that way right now in the meeting, I might be making you irritable or discontented. Who knows? Probably somebody in here. Is he ever going to shut up? And then you're going to treat that with alcohol, but we want to treat it now by turning to God. Does this make sense? That's the whole deal. And so you can't beat yourself up if you are restless, irritable, or discontented during the day. We talked about the nightly review, how you're going to look through the day where you're resentful, dishonest, selfish, or afraid. It's going to happen. But now we don't want to live that way, and we want to treat it right away with the steps and God and not with alcohol. So we're going to substitute a different treatment for this state of what you can call free will or self-will, so that you get back to God's will all the time. So you can see why if you're an alcoholic and you come to AA and you have 30 days sober, but you're not working the steps, how dangerous it is. Because sobriety is when the disease is. So there's a tendency now for new people to come in and people give them a meeting schedule or some numbers or something. But what they really need is to understand that sober, they're in danger and they need to get a treatment plan connected to God, follow the steps as soon as possible. Now, I really believe when somebody surrenders and they make the decision in step three and they start working the steps, that they're starting to connect with God and you're starting to get more and more power so that the drink won't have as much power over you. And then each day when you work the steps and you're doing 10, 11, 12, you're giving yourself a power of choice from God. Now, if you're restless, irritable, discontented, that's your normal state. Unless they can experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Now, what they're telling you is that the normal state of an alcoholic will produce this thought in your mind that you need the sense of ease and comfort from alcohol. This is before you drink. So I'm irritable, restless, discontented, and you may not even say it to yourself that you're irritable, restless, discontented. It's the normal way you feel as an alcoholic, and then you'll say, I need a drink. And you won't be able to even put it into words, or you'll just drink. And your mind is telling you that you need something that's a substance in a bottle to treat the way you feel. So alcohol is a treatment of the way we feel, and it doesn't work. And so that's the spiritual illness and the mental illness right there. And what happens is when you tell yourself you need the sense of ease and comfort, you believe in your own thoughts. Now, if you believe that your own thoughts, you can't use willpower to tell you not to drink. So if you tell yourself at 9 you're not going to drink again, then you're sober and you get restless, irritable, discontented, your mind's going to say you need a drink and you won't see anything wrong with it. So willpower won't work. Knowledge won't work. And so then you have a problem called powerlessness. See, these paragraphs are so powerful, the words they use on how powerless we are. And it says, drinks which we see others taking with impunity. Now here it says, after they have succumbed. Now succumbed means fail to resist or yield. Surrender, capitulate. It talks in the big book how people get drunk and then they wake up and they say, well, how'd that happen? How'd that happen? Anybody do that? You succumb to the idea, fail to resist, yield, surrender, capitulate. And you succumb to the desire. You succumb to this desire in your mind to get the ease and comfort of alcohol. So Father Bill W. said it really well. The alcoholics have part of their brain that is permanently damaged with regard to alcohol, and they cannot see the truth. And so when this part of their mind is triggered, nothing can stop them from seeing the truth then except God. Now somehow when we get this spiritual relationship with God, he gives us a power so we don't listen to that. So when your mind tells you drink's a bad idea, that's God talking to you. And it says after you succumb to the desire again, and actually succumb means to die. We say somebody succumbed from cancer. They died from that. It says the phenomenon of craving develops, and a phenomenon means a cause or explanation that we just don't understand. So once you drink, you get craving. Before you drink, you're irritable, restless, discontent. Your mind seeks the ease and comfort of alcohol. Now, if you don't have a solution to that, you're going to keep drinking, right? and it says this is repeated over and over. Anybody do that? Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change. That sounds really good, doesn't it? The psychic, I looked up, relating to the soul or the mind. We're going to change our personality, the way we think, the way we see things, and we do that, and it's called the spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience. We have a relationship with the spirit. We're awake to God, where we've been asleep to God, so we're asleep to God, so we're irritable, restless, discontent. We don't know that there's a power that can fix that. And so when we're in that situation, we need to change our psychic change. We need to change in the way we live and the way we see things. And we can't do it with our own mind. Your mind cannot fix this. Your mind can never change this. There's very little hope of recovery. And so that's a pretty powerful paragraph. It says, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand. Now, I saw this line differently now. People will see us, and they'll see the way we live, and then they'll say, he's not drinking anymore, or he's not getting as upset, or he seems happy. Linda's nodding. It's true, right? People can see the change in you before you can even see it. And once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. He has a power of choice now. And the power of choice comes from his higher power. And I've seen in the room, I was talking to somebody came Wednesday, and he's in the book, and he knows the book, and for years he was in AA, and he said he didn't study the book. He didn't do any of the steps, and now you can see the change in him. I see the change. The great thing about working with new people is you see them the first day or the first week, and then you see them when they celebrate the year, and how could you not be happy for them? It's such a change. Brian's smiling because he has worked with a lot of new people. And it says, all they have to do, there's a requirement. Do you want to have this... to be able to control your desire to drink? Anybody want that? It says you have to follow a few simple rules. Now, I wrote this. I hadn't seen this before. They can't be your rules. That's the problem, right? The simple rules come from somebody else. And that's why people die, because they're not my rules. And they don't want to do somebody else's rules. Now, why do you finally do somebody else's rules? Because you can't, you're completely defeated and you have no other plan. So why do people do the steps? They do the steps when they run out of choices and they run out of options and they're completely defeated. And I think that's a gift from God. That's the grace. Everybody in this room has been given a grace. Somehow God entered into your life so you could see the truth about alcohol. I heard hitting bottom was described as the point where the alcoholic will begin to let the power in. They're so defeated on their own that they'll be open to the idea of having a power come into their life to run their life. And usually it's said, by God, help me. And so the next paragraph we're going to stop, it talks about if the doctor is honest, he feels his own inadequacy. Now, here's something that we read at every meeting. Although he gives all that is in him, is often not enough. One feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. What do we say at every meeting? We read today, no human power can relieve our alcoholism. That's one of the basic themes of the book. No human power can relieve this. God can and will. If he sought. So God can and will in everybody in this room. So what's the problem? We don't seek him. And seeking is, are you doing the steps? Are you taking, willing to go to any length? And it says, many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach or ordinary therapy. Changing the way you see yourself in your mind. Being able to get your mind fixed so that you can see that alcohol is bad. We can't do that. That's why therapy won't work. And just one other thing, it says, I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. So alcoholism is willpower, lack of willpower. But there's two aspects to it, mental control and the physical control. And then the real problem is the spiritual problem. And since we don't have mental control and physical control, we have to see that we have a spiritual disease. And that's where I think the problem with the first step is the people can understand their powers over alcohol, but they can't see that their life is unmanageable by them, and that causes a spiritual disease that leads them to be irritable, restless, and discontent, and then that triggers the powerlessness of the alcohol. So the first step is your powers over alcohol, but it's triggered by your unmanageable life by self, separated from God, and then it brings you back, so it's a circle. The first step is really a circle. I don't think I've ever said that before, but to me it is. It's a circle, and it goes from one to the other, and then it keeps going. Because when you're powerless over alcohol, your life gets more unmanageable. And then he just finishes with this one paragraph. People took a drink a day or so prior to date. So he talks about people have something really important going on. So somehow they say, well, I have a big meeting coming up. Maybe I'll have one drink, right? And then they can't control it. And then they're doomed. And it says the phenomenon craving at once becomes paramount to other interests. So that once you drink, you cannot see whatever else is going on in your life. And it says these men are not drinking to escape. They're drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. So not only do we have lack of mental control to take the first drink, but once we drink, we have no mental control on how many drinks we're going to have. That's a bad situation. But the good news is, and that's why I say everybody needs to read this, start with the doctor's opinion, is because the rest of the book is how you fix that. And they tell you that in the foreword to the first edition, that if you have this hopeless state of mind and body, which is what we just talked about, then they have directions on what they did so they could overcome this. And so if you want a solution to this, that's what the book's all about. And next week, we'll finish up with Doctor's Opinion. There's some really good stuff in there. And I'll open it up now, and then we'll have some discussion.